She mentioned the presentation about rigor of evaluation, and I will, my disclosure, I don't know about rigor, but it's an example of qualitative data collection and the importance of individual narratives to understand an innovative curriculum in the medical school. So I'm going to get started. I have no conflicts to report. So the Urban Medicine Program has the mission of preparing physician leaders to serve urban underserved communities. The Urban Medicine Program was conceptualized in 2005 by the Dean of Admissions at the University of Illinois and one of the Deans of Curriculum. They saw that in the general medical school curriculum, very little was being done to address health disparities and to talk about the unique context of working in underserved communities when it comes to healthcare delivery. And so they developed this additional curriculum to the medical school that allows students to explore these areas and figure out if you want to serve in underserved communities, how can you do that in a culturally sensitive way. So this was also justified by the Institute of Medicine and the Center for Disease Control that have called for integrating public population health into medical education. We haven't done it very well. If you're familiar with UIC, the medical school is about a block and a half from the public health school. Very rarely do they even talk or collaborate in any way. So the overall consensus is that lasting improvements in health of populations necessitates applying both clinical care and population health principles. So medical schools are really in a key position to do this. Other than requiring medical students to take an additional year or two of an MPH, you can integrate and incorporate some public health principles, and we believe it's an essential way to do it to prepare physicians in this current context. So we believe that doing it in a community-based way, including community members from underserved communities, is one way to bring these together. So UMed actually, our classes are 24 medical students per year, and we actually pre-select them based on their interest in underserved communities and health disparities. So some may argue that this is a curriculum for anybody, but the research also shows that those that are not interested turn off, and those that are really interested and just get a little sprinkling of it don't get enough to really turn it into some kind of effect on their clinical practice. So we also look at possible fluency in another language, traveling to other countries, this kind of having a more wider view of the world. And unique to this program, there's not many like this in the country in general, but unique to this is that we don't focus on folks only going into primary care. We believe that no matter what physician you're going to become, having an awareness of this and the context of care is really, really important. And you'll see that we do get students going into different specialties. So these are the overall curricular themes of the program. I'm not going to be able to go into too depth in the curriculum because I really want to focus on our interviews with our graduates. But one of the themes is diversity in community and intercultural communication, disparities in healthcare access and outcomes, community-based participatory research, and advocacy and policy. This is all based on, we use the experiential learning theory as a concept, believing that people learn by actually doing some critical thinking and some conceptualization, but then turning that into actual practice, which is their community-based projects. So quickly, the M1 and M2 year, the first and second year in medical school, are about 8 2-hour interactive seminars, and I'll mention the topics in a moment. These are done in small groups with a bit of theory in the beginning, and then the other part is they break out in sessions based on their community teams and figure out how some of these theories apply in the real context of the communities they're working in. In their third year, when they're in rotations, we engage them in web-based modules around leadership and cultural competencies, since we can't get the whole group together during that time. And in the fourth week, we have a 10-day policy and advocacy forum that looks more at the systems level of healthcare and tries to develop their leadership in the area of policy development and advocacy. So you can see at the bottom, what we call longitudinal community rotation is throughout all 4 years of medical school. They get engaged in their first semester of med school, line up, they rank their partners rank them. They are in teams of three for all 4 years at the same community organization. So they build that partnership and apply the skills they're learning throughout those 4 years. So these are some of the topics we focus on during our seminars. And then just a couple of examples of our over 10 community partners that we have. One is Healthy Beat. It's at a homeless shelter for women. These women often live there for extended periods of time. It's in an underserved neighborhood in Chicago on the west side. And one of our students did focus groups and an assessment of needs, and the women said they wanted nutrition and physical activity. So they worked with nutrition students and brought them in to do cooking demonstrations. I helped build some home herb gardens and for them to pick fresh herbs from and talk about the medicinal values of that. And they also developed a physical activity program, and I often go in and teach yoga for them. So I help wherever I can, kind of getting involved with the community at different levels. And this is a program that's been successful for about 5 years now. Another program started by one of our UMed students was an adaptation to a domestic violence curriculum that was developed in Spanish and is used to help hairstylists recognize the signs of domestic violence. So it was recognized that women or men in abusive situations often are only able to come to their beauty salon by themselves. Oftentimes, otherwise, the dominator is always with them. And then also, you can imagine the relationship that you probably have with your beauty salon. You're talking about things you probably don't tell a lot of other people. So in addition to that, they look at signs like missing hair, bruising, or if the partner is controlling how they get their hair done, things that would suggest domination. And then they don't provide services, but they refer them to Mujeres Latinas en Acción, which is a domestic violence service agency in the area. They actually just presented this to a beauty school, and they now want it to be a mandatory part of their training in all 7 of their locations. So it's expanding rapidly, and this again was founded by one of our med students. This is a brief overview of the 10-day Health and Advocacy Forum. We build competency and advocacy and policy by having them have 30 seconds to talk to a legislator about their issue or write a letter to the editor or a fact sheet. And then each day is around a different disparity and getting them to understand a case study that goes from a community-based issue around health and goes all the way up to coalition building, stakeholders, maybe creating a bill and then passing it in legislation. So these are some of the outcomes. I'm going to go through this quicker so I have enough time to get to the results that I really want to focus on. So culturally competent physicians aware of sociocultural and environmental factors, community advocates who can work collaboratively with the community to address health needs, researchers who don't just research behind their computer but actually get out and do engaged research that is going to actively reduce disparities. And we want them to be policymakers. We want them to think of themselves having a responsibility to leadership, and that realizing these 4 years in the community, they realize that there's only certain things you can go before you kind of reach a barrier that's based on a law or something preventing things from really moving forward, and that they need to be actors and shakers in that arena as well. So the overall objective that I really want to talk about today was an evaluation we did with our graduates of our program. So we often got the comment, this is great in medical school, but so what? They go out into practice, they're going to become surgeons, they're going to become physicians. This is really cute, but are they really able to do this and change as a practitioner? So this was exciting for us. This is the first time we were actually able to inquire among our students. So we chose a convenient sample of graduates from the years of 2009 to 2013. We started this off over a year ago as focus groups. Maybe not surprisingly, we were not able to get any physicians and residents that could meet at the same time. So we actually turned them into individual interviews. And I'm still, we have about 6 more to go. We've had a great response so far. So we did choose those that are either in residency or practice in the Chicagoland area. They were in a variety of specialties and subspecialties, and it was a semi-structured interview for 45 minutes. So this is just, these are all pseudonyms, these are the 4 interviews that I'm going to talk about today. Pedro, a 39-year-old male from the class of 2014 in his second year of family medicine residency at Northwestern, where most of his work is at a safety net clinic in Humboldt Park, a predominantly Latino underserved community. Alonso is 34. He's in his second year of fellowship, did his pediatrics residency at University of Chicago, and is now becoming a pediatric cardiologist at Lurie Children's Hospital. Maria is 28 years old, class of 2014, a surgical resident at UIC, and Pete, 32-year-old Caucasian male from the class of 2012, who is one of the family medicine doctors at Lawndale Christian Health Center in North Lawndale, and he was previously also went to Northwestern Erie Family Medicine for residency. So some of the emerging themes, so you know, you take the interviews and you see what keeps resurfacing and repeating itself. So one of those things was the value of having a like-minded cohort in medical school. So Pete says, the thing that always sticks to me is the classmates. I got to go through medical school with like-minded individuals. That was the most important piece of UMIN. The longer I get away from it, the more I remember how important my colleagues were. Getting the right people into the program is huge. I remember the relationships and encouragement that we shared. Alonso, what I got most out of the program was contact with other UMed students. My best friends from medical school were UMed students. Some ideas, ways of practice, able to grow together through med school. So he says that they often call each other on the phone to consult about difficult cases, not from a clinical perspective, but from the perspective of clients that have a lot of other things going on in their life that are going to affect their patient care. Bodia says that she felt like UMed kept us going from giving up, inspired us to continue. She also said that she talks to her UMed colleagues a lot. It's interesting because we feel very parallel as far as our experience with residency. So remember, Maria is the surgical resident. You're thrust into it. You have all these expectations, idealist to the core. You get thrust into this huge healthcare system that's not what you thought it would be. All of us echoed the same thing. We wish we were still doing community advocacy aspect that made us really passionate about trying to change the healthcare system, patient management, and patient care. Another emerging theme was leadership and community-based skills that they gained during their seminars. They gathered a deeper understanding of community needs, including reliable resources on health disparities, and they all mentioned an asset mapping assignment where they go out into the community as groups and understand how things like broken down buildings, trash, no place for physical activity, how these things affect healthcare behavior. Their community projects, they said, were so important to get a knowledge of how to collaborate with community members and also how to understand their issues. And two of the four of them mentioned that some of their project topics they still continue to do as they're in residency. They've found organizations that are doing the same thing and are really continuing to do that. They also mentioned advocacy and leadership, knowledge of how to talk to legislators, preparing statements and negotiating, and they mentioned that they've already used that in their residency. Here's some examples. Looking in depth at numbers and statistics on health disparities and putting it in terms of the advocacy piece was helpful. You have to have a good grasp on the numbers and be able to cite a reliable source to make your argument more valid. I tried to do it in a respectful way. I've gotten people to listen to some ideas that may have dozed off to in the past. I have been involved in a lot of social justice campaigns, and I think those couple of sessions we had were really helpful in how to advocate in these other arenas like elected officials and how to prepare statements and advocate for things in a way that grabbed their attention. So I found the most helpful thing was the forum that we had at the end. I still have the folder of all the information because that was the best. It was a ton of information and a ton of individuals that are actually out there trying to be advocates and seeing how real and human they were, but they still hold on to some kind of idealism. I love the forum. We felt very fired up at the end of it. Everyone did. So these students come into med school very fired up to make change and to really help the most disadvantaged communities. Research shows that their empathy goes down in med school. So we're trying to keep that empathy up by surrounding them by people that came into med school for the same reasons. And at the end, we really pump them up with being like, you are a leader, now go out there and advocate for real change at the level of the system. So we try and get that, keep them fired up throughout med school, which can be a challenge. The cultural residency, there was a clear divide between those in primary care and those in medical specialties in terms of the ability to get involved in leadership and advocacy. But overall, they all said that their approach to patients is clearly different from their colleagues. One of them saying, I'm trying to meet patients where they are at. And that's a really big focus of our program. So that includes asking them about the resources. Do you have a way to get home? Can you afford a bus pass? Who's going to take care of you when you get home and make sure that you take these medications, and can you afford them? Those are not typical questions that that doctors ask. So in terms of a culture of residency in primary care, Pedro said that he believes that the UMed program clearly set him above the rest in terms of his residency and what programs he was able to get into. He's at Erie Family Medicine Clinic, and he said that there is an expectation that residents practice and do leadership. And one of the examples is he worked with kids in underserved neighborhoods, Latino neighborhoods, inspiring them to become doctors. And he joined a national movement called Tour for Diversity and has
actually right now in Seattle promoting that on the national level. He also joined the American Academy of Family Physicians, drafting resolutions about teaching hospitals, advocating for more money into primary care, and coverage of undocumented citizens, and that resolution was actually passed. Pedro was actually, he's 39, he was an electrician when he went into med school at the age of 34, and he is from a Latino community on the south side of Chicago, and so his main motivation for going to med school was to give back to his community, and you can see he's really taking that on. So Pedro, one of the reasons I chose this residency was because it had all the things I was interested in. Their mission included advocacy and leadership, and I had a chance to do that. There is not that expectation. So Alonso, he's the pediatric cardiologist, said that there were opportunities in residency, and some of his UMed friends got more involved in advocacy than he did, even going down to Springfield. He got involved in teaching health education programs to kids in the surrounding community, again, another UMed project he was involved in. But he said, it's too tough now in cardiology. I'm not nearly as involved, but other specialties are more conducive to these additional projects because of time constraints. So again, he did in residency, fellowship, no time. In contrast, surgery, Maria said, you realize that your mentality is really different than that of your colleagues, especially in surgery. People in surgery snuff at you for your interest in advocacy, but I have found people with similar interests as me. She says it takes a different mechanism to be an advocate for patients as a surgeon. The way I approach patients is different. Where are they coming from? What's going on at home? And she says it's clearly critical when you're a surgeon as well. I mean, you're going to have an injury that you have to go home and get taken care of. Do you have the family support to take care of that? Surgeons don't typically ask those questions either. UMed's influence as a practitioner, they believe they take medicine out of the equation a lot more than their peers. They're always cognizant of the situation happening outside of the hospital and are part of letting patients make decisions about what they can actually do. And I believe that this community-based approach, even though we build things on a community level, we tell them communities are experts in their own health, and you need to take that into the clinical encounter and make sure that you're asking them, what are your needs? How can I help you? And I'm telling you, throughout the whole rest of medical school, they're pumped up like, you are a leader, you are the best, you have all the answers. And this really makes them humble and realize, I don't know the answers at all. My patient, we have to work together as a team. And they really see, so we've seen the community-based approach trickle into every patient encounter they have. So Alonso, who is, again, the pediatric cardiology fellow, said that at UFC there's a large African-American population, folks on Medicaid, kid care, out-of-state residents that come never have to deal with these issues before, like families not being able to fill prescriptions for vitamins, distrust surrounding immunizations. There are lots of things I saw at U of I and in UMeds that made me better prepared for this. One of the medical students that's currently a physician in practice at North Lawndale says, the CEO has asked me to come to the board meetings. I'm the only provider that has had that blessing. He's sort of mentoring me in terms of leadership and strategy initiatives that are going on. There's a lot of smaller things, too. I have a bunch of PAs that I'm supervising. I think all of these things fall under leadership skills. I think UMed strengthens your resolve to accept that leadership responsibility. So I'm going to go over these quickly, but I want to mention, like Maria, the surgical resident. She said, I'm still uncertain in terms of what subspecialty I'm going to go into, but whatever it'll be, I'd like to have an advocacy role in it for underserved populations that are affected by the main issues that I deal with surgically. And Alonso, the pediatric cardiology fellow, wants to focus on preventative cardiology for kids and adults, and he said that's almost completely non-existent. So his focus on prevention in a subspecialty is, again, another angle that you can take some of this different orientation that they've gained. So these are all this summarizes some of the things that I've found. All of them did have a prior commitment to underserved. We self-select that way, that they appreciated a like-minded cohort, that they developed leadership and community-based skills that were really applicable further on, that they all address non-clinical issues in their practice, that they pursue being future leaders and advocates, and that the lack of exposure to underserved in medical school, they feel overall is an issue that needs to be addressed in the larger picture. So they all recommended having preset community partnerships. When some of them started, we had them go out and find partners. They felt like it was not as successful at all. Now all of our partnerships are pre-selected and have a lot of them have over 5 years of success. They, again, felt that there's a glamorization of specialties and that we need to focus on what it's like to serve in underserved communities. And one of the recommendations was for us to develop a clerkship that actually allows them to shadow underserved physicians. So in the past, so our projects are non-clinical in nature, but they want us to help because we didn't realize there's actually very little opportunity to go into clinics in underserved areas. The focus is mostly hospitals, and they don't understand or have role models that are working in underserved areas. And they do believe that this program is applicable and really valuable for all specialties. So some of our future directions, we're going to continue with our individual interviews to develop a survey that we're going to distribute to all the other graduates and publish these results. So these are just some summaries, because I'm told to stop, that you can read. But I think that the students did the best at summarizing the effect of UMed and how important it was to them in terms of leadership and residency. So as you can see, anyone interested in doing these kind of programming, it's well worth it. You really cultivate a group of folks that are going to go out there and be real advocates and leaders in healthcare change for health disparities. Thank you.